One more?
Monday, February 4th, 2019, Transportation Committee of Mount Pleasant Town Council. Our agenda is before you. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of the December 3rd, 2018 meeting?
So moved.
Second? We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor of approval of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Public comments. We are trying to get all public comments at the beginning of the meeting. That way we hear what everybody has to say as we move through the agenda without losing pace, slowing down, or getting off track. So if you are here to speak, we would ask you to go to the lectern, give your name, address, and let us know what you'd like us to hear. Thank you.
Good afternoon. George Freeman, 1450 Bowman Road, Director of Community Activity for the CAGE organization. I'm here to speak on an issue that we thought was resolved years ago with respect to Highway 41. We understand that right now you're in the process of working on widening Highway 41, and that's not why I'm here to discuss the widening of 41. But in the plans that came up in the comprehensive plan, we saw something about a connection of a road from Highway 17 to Porsche to Billy Swales Boulevard. This is something that has never been in any plans that we know about, and we thought this issue was resolved when this town decided to build Billy Swales Boulevard all the way to Porsche Bluff. In the capital improvement plans you have right now, a two-lane road that's going to be is planned to be built to go from Highway 17 at Porsche Bluff intersection to Highway 41. That connection would provide traffic to go from 41 to Billy Swales Boulevard right now, if it's ever built. What we're suggesting is that while you're in the process of widening and restructuring with 41, that you make that the connection for 41 in the future, that it turns and goes and lines up with Porsche Bluff, which would provide greater distance between Hamlin Road and Porsche Bluff with traffic right now that backs up between 41 and Hamlin Road. We feel this is a much better way of handling the traffic than coming back to the same old thing of running a road through the 7-mile community, which we thought was resolved years ago. Thank you.
Thanks, George. Next. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mayor Haney. My name is Stan Gibson. I live on 60 on the Harbor Drive down near the Rimley Point area. And I do apologize for having to leave. I have a sick grandchild I got to pick up from school at 2:45, and I'd be in serious trouble with my daughter if I didn't pick him up. So, but my comments are really along a petition that was presented to our neighborhood a few weeks ago about another speed bump, at which I've opposed, which many of my neighbors oppose. You know, I moved here 5 years ago, and we were at that. You know, shortly after that, we'd install about 6 speed bumps along Fifth Avenue. Along a 1/16 mile stretch, along with 2 stop signs, and I really think we sort of have enough speed bumps in the area. It was presented to me that this was the reason for this was that boats that turn on 2nd Street really accelerate to before they get to that hard right-hand turn to go down to the marina or to the boat landing, and I've never witnessed that. I've been there 5 years. I walk a lot. I bike. I travel that road every day, and I just don't think that's a valid reason. Secondly, as of Gary, as of yesterday or this morning, we had 21 signatures that had approved it, and 7 of our 15 neighbors had signed on earlier. 1 rescinded, but this morning 3 have written notices of their rescission. So we're down to less than 18. I think we're down to 55% or 60%. That have requested this. My real purpose, though, is to talk about when our neighbors were approached. I'm an older neighbor. I'm retired, but we have a lot of older neighbors and myself, and they were led to believe, or they at least, that it was implied that most of the neighborhood had signed a petition in our neighborhood. So a lot of the neighbors that I've talked to said, well, we signed it because we thought everybody else had signed it. So we would like to protest that petition. But I do think that we have gotten written confirmation from 3 or 4 of the individuals that had signed it previously. That's my comment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Forgot to remind everybody, 2 minutes, please. Next.
How you doing? I'm Jim Jones.
I am the one who the petition came through, and I've been working on it. Basically, I've been working with Gary, and we basically have worked on this to try to ask for the speed bumps for quite some time. I want you to note that I was asked to do this, and I was given the task of talking to people. So when I'm talking to people, I'm trying to convince them. That what I did tell people was is that everybody on 2nd and 5th, who are the main people that are affected by this, signed on it. That should be a statement to you right there. The reason we're doing this is because the speeders, of which if you look at your paperwork there, the speeding was taking place on a Wednesday. That was the one day of the week that they allowed for this quieting program. It does not take into account the speeding on Friday afternoon, Saturdays, and Sundays. And that's who we're dealing with. We're not dealing with a normal neighborhood. We're dealing with several hundred people throughout the week of any given week. This past weekend, there were 50 people down there. These are people that do not live in the neighborhood, they don't respect our neighborhood, and they speed in our neighborhoods. There's not that many of them, but somebody's going to get hurt. And if you, the people that are, some people are here that are going to tell you about the corner of 5th and 2nd, it's a rounded corner, and people speed there, and a lot of people have almost been hit there. I was also told by Ms. Strickland not to come in the neighborhood, so there were 4 people that I'd never had a chance to talk to in there. So the point, I guess, is, and I'll end this, is if this, in my personal opinion, is not a neighborhood quieting situation. This is how we're going to deal with this boat landing.
Okay.
And basically,
your time's up, by the way.
If we don't get this, then we want you to tell us what you're going to do about the boat landing people.
Next.
Oh, really? God. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and council members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Stan Kablik. I live in Ivy Hole, up on Highway 17. And I'm here today to speak about a petition that our residents have signed opposing 5A, which is the Highway 41 expansion alternative. The petition we've created is by the residents of Ivy Hall. It's in opposition. And alternative 5A was created and chosen by Charleston County as one of the 3 alternatives without prior notice to us, the residents. We had no opportunity for any public comment at that point or objection for that matter. Alternative 5A, as you know, built a 5-lane highway connecting Highway 41 near the Wando River Bridge to Highway 17. This is utilizing the utility easement that travels through Dunes West, Laurel Hill County Park, and Ivy Hall subdivision. This plan would dissect Ivy Hall more severely than any other neighborhood into 3 pieces. And basically, it would fragment many of community members from using other parts of the community, such as public space that they've so kept up with their money as well for the past few years. So we're just here today. I have a petition here of 108 residents who came together in about 4 hours. We were able to get 108 homes to sign in opposition against this, and we're gaining momentum. So we just come here today to ask you to please consider these comments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next.
My name is Becky Hollingsworth, and I live at 77 Fifth Avenue. And I wanted to talk about the speed bump around the corner from where I live. And I live right on Fifth Avenue. And for the last, we've been there about 5 or 6 years, we built the house. And starting right off from where when we first moved in, we thought it was a nice, quiet neighborhood. And right off, a truck would come out of that gated community right in front of us, and no matter, where you were in the house, I mean, you could hear this thing coming, and we used to say, well, there he is, you know, the white pickup truck, and just roaring down the road. I mean, it was crazy. So that kind of tipped us off that there would most likely, you know, be more like that. But when that was first, when Mr. Jones first told us that they were trying to get a speed bump going, I thought that sounded like a great idea, and I couldn't imagine anybody who lived there with a problem with it. And then I found out that there was some problems, and some people were resending their original signature, and it was those folks that were in the gated community. Well, guess what? They don't live on Fifth Avenue. They have no idea. I mean, my mailbox has been knocked over two times, and I'm out there every once in a while doing one of these, telling them to slow up. And when they roar down there, they also, a lot of them are pickup trucks, and a lot of them throw a bunch of crap out of the back of the truck, you know, styrofoam and all that. And like every Monday, I have to go out there and pick up all that stuff. So I would like you to reconsider about the speed bump.
Thank you. Next.
My name is John Wolf, and I actually live across the street from Becky. I'm new to the neighborhood, and I'd like to challenge the gentleman who says he's never seen a problem. The amount of speed that they can pick up on Fifth Avenue with those boats, and of course, as you know, with a 3,000, 4,000 pound boat, it's pulling. The chances of it slowing down if my granddaughter were happening to walk out into the road are almost impossible. So I know that they get up to at least 35, 45, 50 miles an hour on that stretch straight down to the boat ramp. And so it's a true hazard. So I would hope that you consider a speed bump. Also to put a speed bump on Fifth Avenue, which we'll start working on that soon.
My name is Matthew Rodenbach. I live at 89 on the Harbor Drive. I'm here in opposition to the speed bump. I just don't think it's realistic that people actually speed while towing boats behind their trucks. I don't know if you've ever owned a boat, but I have, and when I tow my boat, I typically drive slower and more carefully. I believe this is not an issue around speeding and boats. I believe this is an issue that people have with increased traffic and traffic noise. And by slowing the vehicles down, I believe that they can somehow make a connection to lower traffic noise, and that's what kind of what they're shooting for. I've never seen an issue with speeding there. I have 3.5-year-old twins myself, so I can promise you that if I thought there was a speeding issue,
You're out of order, please.
Yeah.
You have the floor.
Thank you. I can assure you that if I thought there was a speeding issue as the father of 3.5-year-old twins, I would be absolutely in favor of speed, things that would slow people down. I would propose, instead of speed bumps, maybe we get some more police there to ticket people and look at how fast people are going. I don't believe that speed bumps are the answer. They just inconvenience a lot of people who, candidly, like myself and like Stan, do obey the speed limit. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
Good afternoon, Pat Sullivan, 1002 Plantation Court. And I'm speaking as a private citizen and as a board member of the African American Settlement Community Commission. And George is not, George left, okay. If I understand George Freeman correctly, Highway 41 is approaching 17, and if it keeps going straight, if we build a new road, that it would go through the 7-mile community. And there is no road right now, from what I understand. And because of what we've said about trying to protect our history and particularly protect the African American communities, I think that is a horrible idea, and I would like for us to find an alternative to going straight through the 7-mile community. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it. Yes, sir, name and address in 2 minutes, please.
Hey there, I'm Rick Estee. I live at 115 2nd Street. And I understand the gentleman's point about the, you know, how obnoxious these speed bumps are. My wife and I moved to this location from 14 Mises Street in Ion. And as you probably, some of y'all know, two speed bumps appeared in Ion. It seemed like in the middle of the night at some point. And a lynch mob quickly formed, and I was in the mix. I was one of them. So I was very put off by it because, like this gentleman and like the people who live on the Harbor subdivision, I lived off the periphery. So my kids, my dogs, they were all safe. I didn't see the main traffic that came in and out, the real long boulevard that necessitated the speed bumps. But now I'm over here. I live on this street. I see them all the time, and they speed. And it's not just guys with boats that are speeding that way. It's people that are going to the boat landing to get on somebody's boat who does not have a boat. And a lot of them, you know, they've had a few beverages when they leave or on the way there, and they're not very careful. And, you know, the only legitimate argument for not putting a speed bump in there is that, you know, we like our nice cars and we like to go and drive how we want. We don't want to go for bumps. But to me, from a life and safety standpoint, it doesn't make sense to not put them in there. I think it's important to put them there. And I think one or two extra speed bumps, given all that we have in that neighborhood, is really not an issue. So thanks.
Thank you. Next. Yes, sir.
Mike Tinkey, 208 Venning Street. I'm here about the signs. I think it's great. We're going to be looking at consistent use of signs, but also think we ought to look at the unintended consequence of where those signs are and where they're placed. We went through this in the old village a while back, and a number of signs were placed to much uproar to the community. Really didn't want them, didn't really help. So I think in historic areas of like downtown Charleston or the old village, we have these monuments. They're quite nice. They've been there quite a long time, and at least take into consideration the fabric of the community and also good public input as well as public review of this as we look at safety and security and the things that come with consistent signage for fire and protection, etc. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Next, anyone? All right, seeing none, that will conclude item two of public comments. This brings us to item number three, discussion regarding Highway 41 improvement project. Who wants the hot potato now?
Well, I think, sir, perhaps it was member.
Did I see Cal, Mr. Oyers here?
I think it was a member of the committee, sir, that
all right
requested the item be put
Mr.
on.
Mr. Bustos, I believe you put this on the agenda about what level of control the town may have on 41.
Yes, this is another one I wanted for.
This is another topic that I wanted to have for discussion to see what the will of council may be. I'm concerned that the county holding the money for Highway 41 and the length of time it may take and the design that may be forced on us will not represent Mount Pleasant. I know we've sent letters to the county opposing certain options, but I think we should control that process. And I don't know if we can, don't know if it's allowed, but I think for a road project that large at Mount Pleasant that we should be in control of it for our citizens, because it's our citizens and our tax base houses and everything that are going to be impacted. So I'd like to just ask if anyone has similar feelings or if we can even do it. That would hop over to staff. You know, y'all are intimately familiar with the regulations.
I would ask, can we look at this in two pieces? One is, why is this being handled differently than other roads? What was it, Hungry Neck Boulevard?
Yeah, Hungry Neck, the town built.
The town built. Yeah. What level of control we are allowed to have? And the other is strictly the funding. Council has all seen the letter that we all received from the chairman of county council assuring us that the revived, resurrected 526 extension will not affect the funding for Highway 41. That's what they've said. That's what they've gone on the record for. But I believe it was brought up in Finance Committee or one of the committees earlier, is where does that money reside? Because all the control in the world won't do us any good if all of a sudden that money disappears. And then it appears that one of the options, the ones that our citizens were here talking about, not only is it going to affect hundreds of homes, it's going to affect this town because it would remove hundreds of homes from our tax base. And it just does not seem at all practical whatsoever. So, you know, we've been told that if we vote too many options down, it won't make it through the NEPA process and all of this. So I just think some clarity for us and our citizens would be good. Does any other council members have something to add before staff sort of tells us the lay of the land here? Staff?
I can speak to some of it.
Well, I can't. Well,
okay, go ahead.
I'll just say that...
You're the boss.
No. We're happy to inquire as to control over the project. I think the genesis of the county being in control was, one, the funding source, and two, the multi-jurisdictional nature of the project. It's a state highway that goes through many jurisdictions, ultimately, some in the county, some in the town. So they control the money. It's part of the half-cent sales tax. It's an approved project by the referendum. So I think if that money were moved, we'd have a strong argument, because with a referendum, as you know, if the citizens say X is going to be done, and we have to fulfill that situation. So what I would say from a practical matter organizationally is, if we were able to do it, and if it was your desire, we would have to beep up the transportation department to do it. How we've sort of handled things in the past is, there are certain levels of projects we can handle and others larger that we can't, not because we don't have talented people to do it, but because we have always kept our transportation department smaller and leaner and relied on private entities to help design and construct and take on larger projects. So that's my two cents.
Would we have it? Let's say that were possible, mm-hmm. and say it were the will of this council to step up to that role. Would it be possible, A, to use some of the funds from the, and what is the actual amount? What is the on-paper amount of the funds for Highway 41?
I believe it's $129 million, I think, is what was referenced in previous documentation and their financial plan.
Is that right, Cal?
$129 million.
Okay.
All through the sales tax. And, of course, that anticipates generally as I think Eric mentioned this morning, a pay-as-you-go approach. They're accumulating the money as much as they can until they have to get to a bond issue, which is generally going to be the construction portion of that contract, as well as the other large contracts. So I think the funding aspect is pretty clear from staff on where it's from. It's the county's money. It's to manage through the sales tax. The process is, Even if the town took the process over, we would still have to go through the exact same process to get permitting from the federal government, which is the Corps of Engineers. We would be doing the same thing. So unless we had started initially out in this process, I think at this point it would be somewhat of a delay to take that over. And then I'm not sure what we'd have to work out with the county on, if that effort's paid for through their sales tax. So process-wise, it's the same. The funding's with the county in general.
And if I could, sir, it may be worthwhile, either in addition to what you're saying or separate, is, and Brad's had conversations with the county about this, for us to design and handle the construction of that southbound lane. I mean, that perhaps we could... If we could peel that off of them, that might free up some resources on their end and allow us then to move more quickly with that project.
Using half-cent sales tax money or finding another source?
I believe personally that the design of that southbound lane should be borne by the town of Mount Pleasant, because we are sort of peeling off a section of it here. But
how much are you talking about?
Well, that was a $200,000 amount in the mid-year budget document.
Okay.
But the construction cost, because most of what will be constructed can be utilized for the widening project, the construction cost of it should be borne by sales tax money.
Right. for the record, we have conveyed, we voted, we have conveyed to County Council that we want the interim, I forget the actual term we use, but the interim
improvement.
Improvement, yes, sir. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Of a southbound lane done. It can be done without going through the Phillips community. Is it subject to NEPA?
Our discussion, no.
No.
The answer would be this would be outside the NEPA process as an independent project that has independent utility and therefore could be pursued as such. And the county has laid out, and I think we'll, after they work out some of the details on their scheduling, they have worked the interim improvement into their CPM schedule, a critical path schedule, for us to understand when this could occur. And generally speaking, it looks like the design could be complete, assuming a February start, sometime in August, September, with design and permitting. So realistically, they believe you could be under construction with that improvement before the end of the year, if not maybe just after the first of the year, under their current schedule. And I'm just sharing that because we've been, and we're still, they're still refining that schedule, but that's the current look that they have on the interim improvement.
What's the estimated cost of the interim improvement?
I believe Cal has indicated the original or the initial engineer's estimate is a little over $2 million.
Is that correct?
2.1 is the engineer's estimate.
And the length of that is what?
It's right, it's a little over a mile.
And Mayor, if the money is not made available to support a design of that project, you could consider us fronting that money using your fund balance.
Okay.
With a reimbursement provision.
Okay.
Not to slow it down.
Right.
And Mayor, I'll also add that in terms of the control of the money, we've had the same conversation on the CARTA board. CARTA has some pricey projects coming up as well, and my understanding from those conversations is that it is a county policy decision to minimize bonding, and as Mr. Morrison said, until later on in future years. So it's not just this project that's taking that approach. I think county has made a policy decision to pay as you go for now, and using bonding later on, just to minimize costs, I think is probably the issue there. So this is a greater decision than just this project. Okay. Not saying whether it's right or wrong, but
thank you.
There is other discussions going on similarly. Yes.
Mr. Kinney.
Just to clarify for people in the room that might not know what we're talking about, the interim improvement, I brought up a couple of these, this being one of them a few months ago. This is from Joe Rouse to 17, adding a lane for the morning traffic, for the 17 bound traffic. And the good part is, no matter what happens with the rest of the job, if this thing gets, you know, in the event they pick some crazy design that's going to knock through people's homes and it gets in litigation, we can correct this 1 mile of road, which is a big outlet for the areas that use Bessemer Road. So it's worth it, and I'm glad it's looking like we might be able to proceed with it. One of the other ones I had brought up was trying to connect Gray Marsh to Faison Road, and I understand that somebody may be putting that on the agenda for next month, but I don't know where that one stands. Brad, do you have anything on that? Because I asked you about it last month.
We've shown that type of connection in the long-range transportation plan as a potential, but I think what you would have there, since that is, I think on the books, is a county-owned property, you would have the same situation where they would be in a position perhaps to say that's something they don't think is feasible.
So do we know what the cost might look like on that ballpark?
We have not costed that up, no, sir.
Because the objective there would be we're getting less cars hitting 41 in the morning, which seems to be the worst of the two. They're both bad, but the morning's worse. And if some of that Park West traffic could be peeled off through Faison Road, it's easing up 41. So, all right, thank you.
I have a quick question, and maybe Cal is, I don't, are you here working today, or are you just here for the fun? Okay. Well, but besides the fact that we feel like our residents that an alternative that goes through several hundred homes and splits a neighborhood in half is onerous in and of itself, just from a fiscal standpoint, how could the county or the federal government or the state do that to a local municipality, settle up with the homeowners, buy the right-of-way, use eminent domain, and then we're out several hundred taxable homes? I'm not putting down the I'm just asking. There's two things away here. One is the pure aesthetic psychological of, you know, why don't we put highways where they go take the fewest amount, it takes the fewest amount of private property. And the other is, what if some entity just decided, you know, that's what we're going to do, and Mount Pleasant is out, I mean, a lot of money forever, because we no longer have those homes there, those taxpaying homeowners. So I guess I'm asking whoever, or maybe Mr. Pagliarini, I'm asking whoever, is there any restitution to a municipality? Not that it makes that option any better, but it sure makes it even look worse.
And Mr. Mayor, I'll ask, while David's coming up to the mic, I'm not sure that we ever closed the loop on our previous request to reach out to their legal staff on the question of the town's ability to influence the decision. So if you have anything on that as well, it'd be great to hear it.
Right, and thank you. I did, and that's, I have a made attempt. There has been no analysis at this point as to the legal rights necessary for many of these alternative, and this is strictly, Mayor, I believe it was your question about the legal rights and towns using town right-of-way for purposes. Right. You know, we still believe, I think it's clear, that our right-of-way cannot be co-opted for that purpose. I don't think there's any dispute or argument about that. All I will say is, I don't believe that that exercise, that legal exercise, at this point in the process has been accomplished or performed by the county. And I don't think it's unusual that they wouldn't have done that, simply because they're in the permitting process, and I don't know the realistic probability of some of these alternative plans yet, whether it's for purposes of NEPA, whether it's a minimum requirement that they have these alternatives. So that's our position. Your second question is much broader. It would be new to me, 23 years of condemnation, having seen a situation where a municipality or other government entity has those sorts of rights on behalf of its citizens, but we would certainly look at that in detail to make that determination.
Okay, thank you. Do we need a vote of this committee to inquire of County Council what we might want to do, what we would like, the questions we would like to ask them, or is it just as powerful coming from the fact that the committee discussed it and we just want to know?
I think if it was the will of this committee, if it was the will of council to formally request acceptance of the project, then we probably would need something like that.
Could we formally inquire about accepting the project?
Yes, of course.
Inquire?
From this committee, probably.
And just find if they said, okay, here's how. Because that might not be acceptable to us.
Yes, sir.
Or we might not be capable.
An interim project?
No, a full project.
Full project?
You mean the full project, sir.
Or the interim project.
Well, I thought the interim project we were already skipping on. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right? Do we need to address that as well? I thought that had been addressed.
By all appearance, previous action in the committee and the discussion about the $200,000, the county has proceeded with that information and has decided they will proceed with that design and right. That construction. The caveat about whether we get reimbursed for $200,000, that hasn't been decided yet because that's a funding issue, but they're moving forward with that project, unless otherwise directed by our town council.
No, we wanted them to move forward with that project.
So if it's a larger question of the bigger project in general,
right.
I just would advise you, you're going to go through the same process. And at this point, I'm not that sure whether you'd have to where you start over or you just continue. I'm not sure, because there are formal agreements with the agencies involved, being the federal government and the county, on they're the sponsor and things of that nature that you'd have to revisit.
Okay. Mr. Cunningham? Mr. Oyer, how much, what does the NEPA process cost in the county, roughly? Is it significant?
Sure.
So that's a whole different ball of wax than the $200,000. But yeah, let's find out the answer.
Okay. I would be looking for a motion just so that this has the authority of this committee to instruct our staff to inquire of the county what it would look like if the town were to step up our role in getting this designed and finished. Not the interim, because we don't want to stop that at all. We want that going full speed.
So moved.
Have a motion. Is there a second?
Yes, sir. I guess I have a question. I don't really have a lot of interest in the town taking over this project, quite frankly, and I don't think history demonstrates that there's a need for that. We've had other projects funded by the county, large projects that have come in under budget and ahead of time, so I don't think there's a history of poor performance. Now, the question of whether to inquire or not, that's fine. I'm just not clear on when you say the town take over the project, what that exactly means. So if we get some clarity on that, that would help me to sort of know what we're really asking for.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think we should, with the term take over the project, I think we need to be intimately involved, know where the money is, know some milestones, and it's not just to turn it over to the county and say, let us know when it's done. I think people do well what the boss watches, and at this point, I think the town of Mount Pleasant is the boss on this town, or on this road in our town. So, I'm fine with not asking Brad to become the engineer, although he's done that before on Hungry Neck. But I just want to feel comfortable that this road is going to be done quickly, it's going to be done efficiently, and it's going to be done to the benefit of the community, and that's the community at large.
And Councilman Brimmer, to answer your question, I would just like to know what it would look like. We can't make a decision if we don't know. They might say there's no possible way that they would ever give any control back, but I think where I'm coming from, I think our citizens would like to know, are their local elected officials, are we going to have anything in the final say-so of what the final option selected would be? I think we're all a little surprised when 5A came out after we voted down. Which number? I get them confused. We voted one of them down. I can't remember. Was it seven?
Seven
first. We voted that one down. And then I think we were told, or at least maybe I inferred, that you don't want to only send one option up because you got a chance. If that's not approved, you get nothing, and I get that. But then which citizens want to wait in fear, you know, while these options come out, hoping that reason and just the amount of money. I mean, I don't even see how there's enough money in this $129 to do option 5A, $129 million to do option 5A. I mean, it just seems impractical from the start. But if this is just a letter of inquiry, which is the motion that we have, we're just asking, hey, if Mount Pleasant wanted to step up, would you be agreeable, and what would it look like?
The conditions be.
What would the conditions be? And then we would make a decision.
Yeah, as long as we're talking about just gathering information. Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine.
So we have the motion. We've had discussion. We're ready to vote. All in favor of instructing staff to make such inquiry, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Anything else on that particular one? I don't think so. Did we cover all the discussion of that, or is there some more?
I just want to add that we probably need to keep our powder dry for the litigation that's going to ensue also. I don't know if we need to task staff or legal to kind of keep a real close eye on what's going on up there, because when, and I say when because It's almost a guarantee somebody's not going to be happy with it. We want to figure out the town's strategy as soon as possible, maybe do it in executive session, but we have to protect the people of Mount Pleasant, and there's going to be a lot of not-in-my-backyard stuff going on once the project happens, and we need to be kind of on board with getting this done and protecting all residents. And the best way to protect your residents is to do the cheapest way, which is the shortest distance between two points, which is a straight line. But that right now is my opinion, maybe not the town's policy, but we need to think about that kind of long-term and short-term. For 6 or 7 years, we're not going to see this road through. We need to think about where we're going to be when this litigation comes. It's always good to have an idea ahead of time. So throwing it out for thought.
Thank you. All right, let's move on to item number 4, update on Park West Boulevard widening project. One quick question. Does it appear possible to have this completed before the work on 41 begins so that we don't have two big projects? And
yes.
Messy? Okay. That's the best yes I've heard all day. That's fantastic.
And that's what we'll talk about.
Good. All right.
And that was always our plan.
Yeah, it was always.
Oh, I knew it was the plan.
Timing-wise, to make sure that we get this done before we're digging dirt on the other side. Yeah, so
I've had lots of plans.
Yeah.
So as we approach bid time on the project, we thought it'd be a good idea to give you guys an update on the project, show you some of the features that we're going to include, and talk about the updates and what's happening down the road. This is our project limits map. The project starts down by the existing four-lane section near the ball fields, and then moves through the Queensgate Circle and then over to the project end near the Bessemer Circle. Some of the features in the project, we have left turn lanes at all the side streets, and you can see those by the blue circles. We don't have right turn lanes in the project because they're just not needed. We've got a 12-foot wide multi-use path, which is a very exciting part of the project. Also, we have in-street bike lanes. We don't show that on this map, but. And then we have a connection, the multi-use path will ultimately connect to the proposed Mount Pleasant Way. And then for safe pedestrian crossings, we have the rectangular rapid flashing beacons at the two mid-block crossings, one at the roundabout and one mid-block. So those are some of the key elements in the project. And then we have the roundabout. I think that's supposed to pop up.
Hit enter, maybe that does it.
Yeah, there it is. And that's the one we've talked about. I guess that was turns out to be alternate 2 that we looked at early on. Alternate 1A, I think, had impacts on the neighborhood. So we ultimately, I guess, it moved into option 2, which is this one here. The roundabout becomes smaller. It gets pushed further away. So. That's what that'll look like, the dual lane roundabout. Here's what we call the typical section. You can see the in-street bike lanes and two 11-foot lanes in each direction, and then the wide multi-use path. Couple of specifics about the project. Mead and Hunt is our designer. Chris Baker, their engineer, is here if you have any questions. The design is complete. We anticipate permitting to be complete in June, which is about the time construction should start. The cost estimate is about $7 million with a 15% contingency. The construction schedule starts in June, and we estimate about an 18-month long contract. We may go a little bit shorter, but, you know, you get out there in some of those clay soils, and when it rains a day, you lose 3 or 4 days. So we want to have ample time for the contractor to get the work done. Status is we are wrapping up the final quantities, the project construction quantities and cost estimates. Mount Pleasant Waterworks is we will be relocating their utilities as part of the contract, and they have a consultant that's doing that design now. We're kind of waiting on them to finish their design, but if they get us all their design documents in March, we'll be ready to go to advertise for construction.
And I talked to Jim Glennon last week with Waterworks, and they're on track to get us what we need to bid by March.
So. Any questions on that project?
Mr. Brimmer, and then Mr.
And so I would assume that all the piping that's out there now is being placed in accordance with any plans for this project? So we're not redoing
Waterworks.
The work that's going on now?
Waterworks.
Yeah, yes, sir. That doesn't have anything to do with, okay. That's outside of our project limits, I believe.
It starts outside the limits.
Okay. Yeah.
And just to thank you for the left turn lanes. I think that's going to be a huge improvement over the right. road for all those entrances to neighborhoods. That'll keep traffic flowing
right.
smoothly. So thank you for adding as many of those as you did.
Mr. Likens, could you go back to the diagram, please? No, the map. There you go. The yellow lines represent the reflective.
Yeah, the beacons, the flashing beacons.
Okay, why aren't we, have we looked at one? See where the arrow hits just left of the gray marsh circle?
Yes.
Right there. That's a heavily traveled crosswalk for kids going to the pool as well as kids going to school. And whether we like them or not, a lot of golf carts use it. Is it something we could look at? And is it a what's the cost factor?
I think we could probably look at that one. The reason why we have these two at the proposed locations is because we're moving the one that was further down between the two circles, and the new one is because that neighborhood they don't have any sidewalk on that side. So you know we need to get them across the road to where the path is. So that's why those two are there. The other one, I guess we can look at it for sure.
Because it on the top side of the diagram, there's no sidewalk, so everyone has to come over to get to the pool and
right.
whatever else is down
right.
that way.
Typically, we like to have crosswalks where there's a receiving path on both sides. You don't want
to. Well, there is on Gray Marsh.
Right. Okay. Good.
It goes up. Right. It doesn't go across on Parkwest Boulevard. Yeah. But is that an expensive item? Does that require a crazy change?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for taking a look at that. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Anything else? Are we good on Parkwest? All right. That concludes item number 4. Moves us to item 5, consideration of the street sign replacement program in the Old Village area. I remember this has come up before.
Should be.
Do we have a slide?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Should be at the bottom. Last. There. That's it. Okay. Yes, sir. This is a continuation of a discussion that we last January, the committee gave us some direction on this, and I thought I would.
Mr. Bustos was walking out, but he's not mad. Okay, so.
I think I understand that one. Just want to quickly get you up to speed. So we had a program that was adopted in 2016 that said we had to meet these federal mandates, and so we implemented the program, and then there was some discussion about, well, should we be treating the Old Village a little bit differently given its history? So these are the requirements as far as retroreflectivity requirements, text size, color schemes, mounting heights. Those are all kind of technical specifications that had to be met. All right, next one. And once again, the program was approved initially in 2016. Certain places have the logo. There's a decorative post option, and the logo is at the intersection of major streets with neighborhoods. And in the Old Village area, the decision was made to retain the obelisks and place the new signage. So the discussion in January of last year was to postpone implementation of the program in that area so that staff could investigate what are other jurisdictions doing. We followed that up with a memo in June indicating the following. There's the Old Village Historic District area, and the indication was that most of the other places were basically following the federal mandates, and places like Charleston that already had historic signage were able to pursue retaining their signage under the federal mandates that were required. So if you already had historic signage, you could retain that signage. We did not have that. We had obelisks, and the FHWA determined that's not signage. So basically, our research indicated that other folks were complying. We did one municipality didn't respond to us. It was Columbia. We talked to Greenville, Charleston, Columbia. So what
we do need to make a decision, and we have received some correspondence asking for replacement in Pirate's Cove. That signage is very old and needs to be replaced. So that kind of prompted a return to the issue, needing some guidance to eventually implement the program in what we call Area 5, which is the old village area. So what we proposed was to consider either go forward with the straight program, as you see everywhere else, the green signs, white lettering, or perhaps another option would be coordinate with the Old Village Historic District Commission and design a special historic sign for the Old Village Historic District, and that by law can be different. It still has to meet certain requirements, but it can be different than the rest of the signs. And then the third option is kind of a spinoff on that, is to have a different sign design for the whole Old Village area, and maybe consider having smaller district plaques or something that denotes, I'm not as familiar with, you folks probably are, the historic district. Obviously there's the Indian Village portion. There's names in the Old Village you could actually identify, and the historic district could help with that and actually have a different plaque. So I think those are the three options where you can, it's kind of the compromise of you're required to have signage, but if you're required to have signage, let's make it the way we want to see it type option. So I think number two and three is probably what you might want to discuss.
And all of those involve leaving the obelisk where they are?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Will we continue to maintain those?
Yes.
Okay. So it won't be kind of a demolition by neglect. I mean, they'll...
Correct, sir. We haven't...
We put one back.
I think Jody would not have as much joy in his life if he didn't get to maintain those signs. Am I right?
You're correct.
And what we could do, sir, if you want, we could, once it's discussed with the commission, rather than just move forward, we could bring it back to you in this committee.
That would, I'll speak. That I think that would be nice. I mean, we're blessed to have a town that has a historic district, and can't go out and create one of those. And anything we can do to keep that distinct, that's why we have a commission. There's a committee all right with that. So the Old Village Historic Commission will take a look at this and see if there's any outcry or anything, and then bring it back to us.
Recommend some alternative. Yeah.
Would they be able to look at Indian Village and Moultrie Heights and all that?
Yes, sir. What we would be proposing would and that would be option three, and they could look at option two or three if they decide that they only want to sign specifically for the historic district. They could do that, and then the rest of the typical signs would go for the rest. Or they might want to look at option three, but. Yes, if they looked at option three, they could be look at actual names, subset names, neighborhood names.
Yeah, because their responsibility, their area of responsibility isn't that's outside of it, right?
Right.
But I think it's great if it does.
I think we'd value their input, and we could, just because it's outside, I'm sure staff can work with the concept. Yes, sir.
Do we have any idea when those obelisks were originally put in? Well, Jody, you probably know. You're not finding any Revolutionary War shot in this thing? I mean, would we guess they've been there?
They were there in the 50s.
They were there in the 50s. I mean, they're...
Born and raised 59 years. They've been here since 59
years. Yeah, okay. So they're more than half a century old, easily. Okay. Do you need any other direction from us other than run it by the commission?
No, sir.
Okay.
We'll proceed with
that. I have a question.
That.
Sure. Are we in compliance with the manual of uniform traffic control devices as of right now on these things?
In some areas we are, some we're not, and that's
but the, you haven't caught
that's,
up yet.
That was yes, sir. That's correct, and that's the reason we're doing the program. And then we'll have it'll be a 5-year rolling program. We're looking at each section every 5 years to make sure they're compliant.
Thank you.
All right. Does that conclude that? Then we will move on to item 6, 2019 traffic calming program.
I'll try to...
As if traffic calming is not an oxymoron, right?
It is.
Okay.
I'll just answer that, yes. In your package, we provided we do this once a year, and we try to do it at this time of year so we have enough time to get the actual construction of the humps done. But you'll see a spreadsheet that basically grades the applications that we've received this year. We've received five that completed, I'll say we received five that completed the application process. That's with caveats, obviously, based upon the previous discussion. And those five are Law Lane, Second Street, Salterbeck Street, Stockton Drive, and John Bartram Place. So we would recommend that 1, 3, 4, and 5 be meet the qualifications, meaning they meet the speed criteria and the petition criteria, with number 1 recognizing that they still have to complete their petition. And I'm not sure if they will or not, but that would be the condition they'd have to meet based upon your approval. At this point in time, number 2, while they meet the 85th percentile for speed, they do not, based upon this discussion you heard earlier, they do not meet the petition requirement. Petition. Yes, sir, because some folks have rescinded their petition or their signature on that.
And that's not a discretionary thing for us. They either meet it or they don't, right? That's the law?
That's the way the program is written. Yes, sir. It's pretty cut and dry. The speed is 32.00. The petition is 75%. So that's, you know, that's the way the program is written. It's
how far are they from meeting the petition requirement? Gary?
Like me to go to the podium?
You don't really have, well, I'll ask our recorder. Might help.
Yeah, go up there so we hear you speak.
When I first received the petition from the applicant, Jim Jones, I had 22 signatures of 29 possibility. That was 76%. I think we are down to 19 affirmative signatures now of 29, and that's 66%. So,
what's the legal threshold?
75%, so they're about 3 or 4 shy, and I don't think there's a chance that he could get the signatures from Onda Harbor folks. They seem pretty adamant that they're not
in favor. How much time do the citizens have to try to work on that?
We gave Snee Farm an extra 3 or 4 weeks because of some
difficulties,
some circumstances with the applicant. So, I mean, we could give them another 3 or 4 weeks as well.
Does that sound reasonable?
Yes, sir, it does. We've done that before up until the point where we might have to come to you. I don't think we'd have to do this. We could just make an internal decision. But if not, then we'd say we need to get this done before July 1, which is the end of the fiscal year. But we're early this year. We tried to get it in February. We've done it as late as March.
Okay.
As far as a decision from the committee.
I'm sure the folks here today with that on their minds are glad to hear that. There's more time. All right. Thank you, Gary. What do you need from us?
I would...
Approval?
Approval of those. Well, I guess if you're going to condition that 1 and 2 be upon completion of a full acceptable petition, then you could do 1 through 5 to be approved with those conditions for 1 and 2.
The chair would like to do it that way. How does the committee feel?
I have a question. Are these new speed humps going to be the ones with the access for emergency vehicles in the middle? Well,
probably not at this point, because we're not to the point where we've been able to develop a full spec on that. So unless we were otherwise directed to wait, we would put in what was approved last year. It's just a timing issue.
They're coming down the line.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And is it possible, maybe this is for Mr. DeMora, is it possible to just have a direction from committee to ask the police department to pay extra special attention out there on those Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays? They may be doing it already, but is that something that we can do as a committee to ask for that extra police protection that the people clearly are asking for?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll talk to the chief and
see if he can redirect some resources.
Do we need a motion for that, or?
No, no.
Okay.
We do need a motion to conditionally approve selections 1 through 5 with numbers 1 and 2 needing to meet the petition requirements. Do we have a motion? Yes, sir. Did you?
Yeah. I'll make that motion. Salterback already has a speed cushion on it.
Yes, sir. That was the temporary one we placed by direction. Yes, sir.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Have a motion, have a second. Any further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The motion passes. Item number 7 is project updates. It's a little late, but give us the short.
Okay. I can do that.
If there's anything, maybe not every single one. But.
Our favorite project is this one, Coleman Boulevard. We're done with all the stormwater drainage on section 1 of the project. So that's kind of a huge milestone for guys like us. So from Fairmont Avenue to Mill Street, all the stormwater drainage is in, except for a couple of the side streets. We'll be wrapping up stage 2 construction this month, moving into stage 3 with final completion scheduled in October, August to October. So moving right along. Let me see. I've got one more. All-American Boulevard. Recall we had the public meeting for that right before Christmas,
right.
And we wanted to give y'all some of the feedback from that meeting, and we're looking at, I guess, phase 1 of the project now, where it connects to existing All-American Boulevard, and we're proposing that this road tie into the neighborhood and Mayor, you and I spoke about this a little bit at the meeting, as well as Councilman Kinane, about the connection to Laurel Park Trail. And I just wanted to, we've gotten some questions and some comments about that connection. And I just want to let you all know what we're proposing to do here is we're proposing to make the connection because it was always platted to be there. This is a plat from 2004 and 2005, where we did some good planning, some preeminent planning, and knew there was going to be growth in the north area, north section of town. So we wanted to develop this frontage road system. So we worked with a developer, and it was approved through the planning commission. The right of way was platted. A temporary cul-de-sac was constructed, and this is the area back here. It's making this connection here. There's a 20-foot buffer there behind the homes that was also added. It's our intent to make that connection, to make an intersection there. We don't feel folks will, there's no reason for them to cut through there. There's no benefit for them to cut through Laurel Park Trail. We need the connection. You either need a connection or a cul-de-sac to provide basic services. I mean, you have to have a turnaround for fire trucks and garbage trucks and trash trucks. So just wanted to let you know that was kind of our intent, was to make that connection and proceed with the design that's been complete since 2011.
All right.
So that's kind of where we are on that project.
And those are the only two.
You're right.
And we can give you the written updates.
Right.
Okay.
Question?
That would
be
good.
Yeah.
Mr. Kinnett?
On that All-American Boulevard, can you go back to the diagram again? It looks like that road, the new road's going right through that kind of the bulb of the cul-de-sac.
And that's the way it's constructed.
That's exactly the way it is. So there's really no way to not go through the street.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Along that same thing, we've received a couple of emails that said it's going right through the neighborhood.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not. And it's going to be buffers.
There's an existing 20-foot buffer.
Yeah, okay. I think Joel Ford required that, just anticipating some of those issues with the frontage road as it was built.
Okay, so the buffers between the frontage road. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Bremer, you good?
I'm good.
Is that it?
Yes, sir.
All right, that concludes, that brings us to item number 8, which is to adjourn. Unless there's any further business for this committee, we will stand adjourned.
Good job. Oh, I'm sorry.